To discuss the real issues affecting the Tasman nations, this is Trans-Tasman Talk, jointly produced by TheUnshackled.net and RightMinds.nz. Now, here's Tim Wilms in Australia and Dewa De Boer in New Zealand.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Trad Tasman, 30th of July, 2021. It's Tim Wilms, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled, here in Melbourne, where it is 6 p.m.
And this is Dewa De Boer here in Auckland, where it is 8 p.m., and it is good to see everybody in the chat already. We're streaming on the Right Minds YouTube channel as well as the Trad Tasman Talk Odyssey channel, and I will just share a link for that in a minute. I just need to fix up my chair first.
I need to fix up my hair. It's getting quite out of control. The hairdressers have been closed again during our, it wasn't quite 2 weeks, our 12-day short, sharp, hard lockdown because of the Greater Sydney incursion, as it was called, the dodgy removalists that came from Greater Sydney, who were carrying the Delta variant, which it spread in this apartment complex that they were moving stuff through. Then spread at the MCG at the footy, then spread through the rugby at Amy Park as well. There are all these super spreader events the footy is government sanctioned, so I should say these two government sanctioned super spreader events caused the circuit breaker lockdown, and now we're in Melbourne. What is that? Lockdown light, which everything is open. You're not allowed to have people over to your private home. You have to meet your friends and family outdoors, but a group limit of 10 or at a cafe. Although the meme that's been going around, because the brothels have reopened, that you can meet your family at a brothel,
it's very convenient how the government causes the lockdowns, and the government gets to tell you when it's okay to get out of lockdowns, and the government gets to sanction certain strange behavior during lockdowns, as we have discussed many times on the show already.
So South Australia, they also had a snap 7-day lockdown because of another incursion. That's the buzzword from Greater Sydney. They suspect a return traveler who was quarantining in Sydney, who had to be rushed to the Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney, caught the virus there. They were an Adelaide resident and took it back. So they've emerged from their lockdown with much less restrictions than Victoria, though. What is it? Greater Sydney, their case numbers and hospitalisation and ICU and deaths continue to increase. They had 172 cases today, which was down from the record 239 cases yesterday.
But how many deaths are they actually having? Because I hear all this talk about cases everywhere, but nobody's talking about deaths anywhere.
Deaths due to this Sydney outbreak, and they've all been amongst the they're keen to say this during the Daily Gladys and Hazard 11 a.m. all occurred in the unvaccinated, and they've said that you can be healthy in the morning, then be on a ventilator by the evening. Brad Hazard, as he's known, health hazard, biohazard. He actually said today that people are turning up dead on arrival from COVID. This is what he said.
There are 3 million3 million unused AstraZeneca jabs in Australia. That was reported a couple of days ago. So is the federal government holding back vaccine?
The Premier is taking that message, as I heard her say earlier, to the National Cabinet today. So they'll work through those issues. but we want more vaccines, and we particularly want more Pfizer, but we'll have AstraZeneca, we'll have anything we can lay our hands on at the moment. Can I just say something else to the community more broadly? What hasn't been said today is that, very sadly, we are seeing more families coming in with a family member who is presenting not alive but dead. That is a terrible situation. What we're hearing is that some families, particularly in southwest Sydney and western Sydney, are staying at home when they have symptoms and not coming out and getting tested. Can I say to those families, our government, the New South Wales government, is perhaps not like the governments that you have lived under overseas. We are here to support you, and our health system is here to support you. If you have any symptoms at all in a family member, come and get tested, and if somebody is sick, please bring them to our hospital, but preferably ring ahead and tell us that you're bringing that person in. We are there to help you. Our health system is there to help you. Don't sit at home and worry about the fact that you've done anything wrong. We want you to be looked after, and we will look after you. Our health system will look after you. So come forward, please.
As Cresho said, Sydney migrant ethnic community, our government is not like the ones that you have in that come from, well, were in your country of origin. That's why they've sent 300 ADF officers to target southwestern Sydney area, and that's also why they're arresting and charging protesters as well. So nothing like, say, the Iraqi or Cuban government, nothing like that at all.
Yes, this is gaslighting of epic proportions. I'm surprised he didn't throw in a diversity as our strength while he was at it.
Now, they've continually upped the restrictions in the Greater Sydney outbreak since the lockdown doesn't seem to be working. It's 5 weeks in. When they first locked down, daily cases were at 30. Now they're in the high hundreds and even 200 yesterday. And of course, the reason why the lockdown's not working is because it's not tough enough. That's always the case. And
we actually had some articles from some of the paid propagandists in the media saying, if the Delta variant gets to New Zealand, then level 4 may not be enough. It may not be enough to stop it. It may spread through supermarkets. We may need to start welding people into their homes. Yes.
Yeah, Wuhan is level 5.
That's right.
The number of apartment complexes in Melbourne recently have gone into level 5 lockdown. So if you live in an apartment complex in, well, Melbourne or Sydney, and there's a positive case there, then you'll basically be metaphorically welded to your home under 14 days of literal house arrest, not allowed to do everything. People have to bring food to you. So that's... because obviously apartments are enclosed indoor where aerosol spreads. So if you're living in an apartment complex currently, if there are positive cases ventures anywhere inside, then yeah, you're 14 day Wuhan lockdown. And so now Gladys G's, what is that? She doesn't want to, for political reasons, obviously want to emulate Dan Andrews' stage 4 lockdown. She's going for, what is it, more targeted restrictions in the 8 LGAs of concern, which obviously have heavy migrant populations. So she's introduced the 5 kilometer radius rule for exercise and shopping. You're not allowed to leave those LGAs for work unless you're an approved worker, and then you have to get tested every 72 hours, and also introduced outdoor masks as well, and upped the mask fine from $200 to $500 to basically make mask compliance stronger. But obviously, they should probably start at the press conference. This was Brad Hazzard after he exited the press conference a few days ago.
We'll see you tomorrow.
they took them off even while the cameras could still capture them there.
Yeah, it was still on. Yeah. It's all in your face. Mm-hmm. And New Zealand, speaking of getting the Delta variant into New Zealand too, time and time again over the past year and a half, coming up to 2 years now, Jacinda's insisted, no, we can't have exceptions for this, that, or the other person. We can't bring this person home from somewhere else. Until just this week, she had a phone call from Helen Clark saying, we need to get, one of these UN workers in Fiji has to come to New Zealand. So we have had a United Nations worker with the Delta variant airlifted into Middlemore Hospital. So if we get a break, an outbreak in New Zealand, it was basically like we couldn't quite arrange to get the Australian to bring the Delta variant into New Zealand to the other month. So we're going to have to try again and see if we can get it, get it from Fiji this time.
Have they been vaccinated, this UN worker?
I'm assuming that if you're working for the UN and you're helping out and distributing, I guess they're distributing aid and vaccines in Fiji, of course this worker would have been vaccinated, right?
But of course, we're hearing now that if I hear the Delta variant is a game changer, that's like on my bandwagon now. So is gold standard on my
platinum. We're platinum standard, man. Delta plus.
New South Wales was called the gold standard when it came to containing COVID contact tracing quarantine without lockdowns until now. But mm-hmm. that is because Delta is a game changer. And of course, well, we have the CDC in the United States saying, oh, even vaccinated people should wear masks indoor.
Transmission.
Yeah, that's right. So again, the goalposts are being moved because of, it's a new game changing variant, the most infectious variant on the planet, we're told.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And we nearly started late because Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, got up quite late on a Friday afternoon after National Cabinet to. He's spoken previously about the four-phase reopening plan, and so they've threshed it out with a bit more detail, but of course it's subject to change if there's like a new variant or something. So we can move to, what is that?
The Zeta variant.
Yeah, the transition phase is phase two, I think, where lockdown could still be used, and that... And that comes into effect when 70% of the eligible population is vaccinated. Then the consolidation phase, which is 80% of the eligible population is vaccinated. That's when all vaccinated Australians are exempted from all restrictions. Lockdowns could still be used in small like communities, like you used an example of a remote community, or what is it, a culturally different area. That's there. Phase three or C, if you've got the jab, then you're exempted from restrictions. And then phase four, when we reopen to the rest of the world, they actually haven't thrashed out the details of phase four or D. They've got the phase, the final phase, no detail.
You're never going to get there. They don't have to come up with it because they know they're never going to have to move to phase four. They can just keep doing this over and over again. We just got to change the different Greek letter.
This was, of course, these different phases were informed by, what is it, expert modelling from the Doherty Institute for Infectious Diseases experts, so putting it all through one of those supercomputers like they do for climate modeling.
That's how we got into this mess in the first place with the Royal
Pilgrim College of London by Professor Royal College. Neil Ferguson. So,
yes, that seems like a lifetime ago.
The National Cabinet as well set the initial vaccination threshold to go to the second phase extremely high with 70. There's still a supply constraint, but apparently by September and October, we're told there's going to be this flood of Pfizer and Moderna, which all the Australian public is waiting for because AstraZeneca has been so tarnished by the reports of blood clots. But as Scott Morrison said, in Phase C, vaccinated Australians will be exempted from restrictions. So we'll see, it's almost certain we'll see a vaccine passport implemented in Australia. And again, Brad Hazzard, the New South Wales Health Minister, had some pretty, you would say, blunt, terse words for people who don't wish to get vaccinated, because remember, it's still voluntary.
We had a question for the lady, the journalist here before, about some people not wanting to take vaccines. Well, my message to them is you're being extremely selfish. If you think you can not have a vaccine just because you don't want to have a vaccine, well, you should think about what you're doing to your family and to the community. And I would say even more than that, what a hide you have, what a ridiculous position is that when you're going to put health staff at risk. And when you get sick, you're going to expect to come into hospital and get paid for by taxpayers. You know what? It's time for those who actually think that way to wake up, including commentators who actually don't base their commentary in any logic whatsoever. So, sorry, Lucy.
So there you go there. It was filtered into your news in New Zealand the past weekend, there were massive anti-lockdown protests in lockdown Melbourne and Sydney, which took the local police by surprise. There is apparently another anti-lockdown protest planned for Sydney this Saturday, though none of the people who attended like last week and were fined and many of them charged on summons know anything about it, though there's been plenty of warning from the politicians not to attend it, including from the New South Wales Police. They're going to say they have 1,000 officers. So a lot of the people who did attend last week's one think that sort of the rumor of another anti-lockdown rally this Saturday is some sort of trap. And well, this is what Gladys and Brad Hazzard said about the potential protest tomorrow.
Can I please warn against anybody taking up illegal activity and protesting tomorrow? Your actions will hurt, forget about the rest of us, but you could be taking the disease home and passing it on to your parents, your siblings, your brothers and sisters, or anybody you might have limited contact with in your workplace. Do not give those you love the most a death sentence. This Delta strain is contagious, it's deadly, and it's affecting people of all ages.
There was one man who the police fortuitously stopped before he got to the demonstration. Maybe he still went to it. But if he got there, he was effectively carrying a deadly weapon. He was carrying the virus. So my message to anybody about going out anywhere, particularly to that demonstration, is you've got to be crackers to go to that demonstration tomorrow, because there'll be a lot of people potentially there with the deadly weapon, that is Delta virus.
A concealed weapon, because, of course, many people carrying Delta are asymptomatic. So it's a concealed weapon
a deadly weapon. If they shoot you with it, you have a 99.97% chance of surviving.
And that's why they've got the ADF, which apparently they're, what is it? I'm confused that we're told by, New South Wales authorities that some are already here, but they're not going to be deployed until Monday. So I assume they're going to, make sure that they shoot and disarm this deadly concealed weapon there.
There is a good comment here from Crisho saying that he admitted as a bioweapon. That's right. It came from a lab in China. And if you're accepting illicit arms from China and taking them to protests, then you're spreading bioweapons.
Mm-hmm. And now, as you would also be aware, and many people in the chat will be aware, as always, we're on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel, and I managed to hit the Odyssey link this week. So if you're watching on Odyssey, you can send through a hyper chat, which Dewey will read out. And I've of course got the Entropy link, where you can send through questions and super chats, because that's what we focus on for the last section of the program. But most of the Melbourne anti-lockdown rallies are covered by Avi Yemini of Rebel News. And he put together a video clip of the diverse range of both political opinions and cultural backgrounds of those attending Melbourne's anti-lockdown protest, and you'll never guess who he ran into. I'll just play this clip.
Remember Egg Boy? He became an international hero of the left after this stunt.
Overwhelmingly, Egg Boy is being hailed a hero. A GoFundMe for the team, raising tens of thousands of dollars.
He's a national hero.
Kid or boy.
The real cause of Fraser Anning getting hit with an egg is Fraser Anning saying things that prompts people to throw eggs at him.
Well, I actually wasn't going to air the following clip to protect him from the same people who celebrated him just a couple of years ago, leading to the large platform he now has. But yesterday, Egg Boy shared, you know, the wrong opinion on his Instagram and quickly got cancelled by the Twitter mob. So now that he's outed himself, I believe it's essential to share. Again, just to demonstrate how diverse the anti-lockdown movement and protests really are.
What do you mean meditating?
Over here today. Today.
Yeah. And I wanted to show them peace, and I meditated in front of them.
Do you have it on video and everything?
I don't.
As you see there, he's clearly shook by being arrested and fined for meditating at the protest. So you tell me who the tolerant Australians are. The ones willing to fight for the rights of every Australian, or those who will destroy anyone, even their own, if it progresses their agenda?
Yeah, I love you.
Now that is wholesome content.
the woke junk news websites that are praised him as a hero for assaulting a sitting senator, of course, were horrified that Egg Boy was at the anti lockdown protest. This was the post that he shared on his Instagram, which started the Twitter cancelling outrage against him. There were some tweets that wished that he would be egged as well. He shared CDC emergency approval this post here is more the actual truth of the matter is more complex than this post makes out here about the CDC withdrawing emergency approval. That's not the whole story there. I've just got to make that disclaimer. And he also shared this in his story about the mask athletes at Tokyo. Yeah, let's make athletes cover their faces after winning gold medals from a lifetime of hard work and dedication. They've probably all been tested 100 times a day as well. Sick of this shit. Now, if you regularly checked Egg Boy's Instagram, he's got 322,000 followers. Most of those obviously came after he egged Fraser Anning. He's attended a lot of those alternate lifestyle New Earth summits up in the hippie region of northern New South Wales, centered around Byron Bay. I had one of the leaders of those communities, Neil Pascoe, on my show a couple of weeks back, and their against the lockdowns, and so they've attended many of the various anti-lockdown pro-freedom rallies around Australia, and what is it, mixed with the patriots who've attended, and also there's been a lot of Muslims as well who've attended these such rallies. So it is Avi's report was 100% correct. He also interviewed a Muslim who attended as well. The rallies are full of all different types of people of different types of political persuasions who all get together under the one message. I know that the mainstream news media sort of like to make out that there's tensions between the various factions, which there's not really there. And what is it, in the 2019 federal election, Boy was spotted at Labor Party HQ. And given that Dan Andrews' goons gave him a $1,000 fine for meditating, don't think he'll be at Labor HQ next state or federal election.
Now, this is something I posted on my Telegram channel. And if you're watching this and you haven't yet followed the Telegram channel, go and do that. But today I was just thinking how... in some strange, small way that we could be a little bit thankful here in New Zealand for having a Labour government rather than a national one, because at least the Labour government in New Zealand is incredibly light-handed when it comes to any type of enforcement, any types of fines or any type of police action. They tend to be incredibly light-handed compared to what the national government here would be. Same thing when it comes to rolling out the vaccines. They're incredibly slow here in New Zealand. It's going to be at least, I think if you're over 60 and you want a vaccine right now, you have to wait for a month. The likelihood of compulsory vaccines is very, very low. Compulsory masks never got very far except for public transport. We've dodged a real bullet there compared to what you.
Well, because you've maintained COVID zero pretty much, except
And that the policy that they selected, whether or not it was the right one, at least they stuck with it consistently, and that has not happened in Australia.
And now, as we saw in the New Zealand general election last year, given that before the COVID restrictions, Jacinta Ardern had already promised that she was going to crack down on firearm ownership and also free speech, and the National Party also fell into line behind that. Mm-hmm. David Seymour of the Libertarian ACT Party became the sole dissenting voice against these attacks on freedom, and the ACT Party was handsomely rewarded. It was October, wasn't it? It was delayed by a month. It was supposed to be September 2020, right? Delayed until October because of the Auckland outbreak. The ACT Party were rewarded. David Seymour had been the lone ACT representative for many years, was joined by 9 new ACT MPs, and the party, which looked like it was basically dead, has risen from its near death. And David Seymour is still putting himself forward as basically the real opposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they managed to do some really good research and target their audience really well. They managed to take advantage of what was going on, using current events to their advantage, focusing on the issues at hand, not getting distracted at all, and picking up some media favorability. In some ways, he managed to present himself as a bit goofy and likable, whereas the media obviously had it out for the National Party, who went through a few leaders, eventually with Judith Collins, who is despised by the media, as were Todd Muller and Simon Bridges before her. So, they've run a very, very tight ship.
Well, with what is happening with Australia with the second year of lockdowns, including the Liberal Premier Gladys Berejiklian, who said we've got the systems in place that will never have to lock down again. And now she's basically turned Greater Sydney, and because there's still restrictions in the rest of New South Wales as well. Pretty much when it comes to police enforcement, turned New South Wales into another Victoria, which means that these police state lockdowns are now bipartisan. And this has horrified many libertarian-leaning members of the Liberal Party, including John Ruddick, who authored the book Make the Liberal Party Great Again, which advocated democratic reform of the Liberal Party. He's now decided that the Liberal Party can no longer be made great, so he's joined the Liberal Democrats, which is our biggest libertarian party, which has two Victorian members of the upper house, David Limbrick and Tim Quilty, who, again, are basically the real opposition leaders when it comes to opposing police state lockdowns, because, well, the Victorian Liberal opposition are just basically a mess now. They just said, they said recently that, oh, Dan Andrews didn't close the border enough to stop the fifth lockdown here. So John Ruddick, he wrote an article in The Spectator, why I'm off to the Liberal Democrats. He's going to stand for them at the next federal election for the Northern Beaches seat of Warringah, which was a seat held by Tony Abbott, which he lost to independent Zali Steggall. He attended the anti-lockdown protest in Sydney on Saturday. He said it was the most peaceful protest he had been at. He was ripped into on Twitter because of misrepresented footage of that gentleman supposedly punching a police horse. I guess you should have said mostly peaceful, and then that would have been more accurate there. And he's recently been joined by his mate, Ross Cameron, who is a former federal Liberal MP for Parramatta, former Sky News contributor. His son, Dougal Cameron, who runs Carnage House Productions, I think is already a member of the Liberal Democrats. And also with Campbell Newman, former Queensland Premier, quitting the Liberal National Party, he is rumoured to be considering a run for the Senate under the Liberal Democrats banner, which, if he does, would have been quite the transformation from being quite an authoritarian premier with one of his signature policies, the Vlad Laws, which stood for Vicious Lawless Association Disestablishment Act, which would any members or associates of criminal organisations convicted of a serious crime would have to serve an extra 15 or 25 years on top of any prison sentence, and it was targeted at bikie groups, but it really gave the government sweeping powers to declare any organization a criminal organization, and to basically show that he meant really serious business and wanted to humiliate the bikies in jail even more, decreed that they should wear pink jumpsuits.
That may just be the kind of man that the social Democrats need. Liberal Democrats. I think I was thinking of a Northern European party there. You've got a chance for what is a more bold, right libertarian party in Australia taking advantage of the of current events in the same way that it has worked out in New Zealand. The thing that's really missing in New Zealand and going to be missing in Australia, as well as having a proper social conservative party, and or any force that could have any representation at all. Obviously, in New Zealand here, I'm hoping that the new Conservative Party is able to make some more progress next time, and perhaps you have someone in Australia on the social conservative side who is planning.
And the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party, although they're not have socially conservative values as one of their core values, their MPs, Pauline Hanson, Mark Latham, are, when it comes to social issues, largely conservative, but that's not their core mission, like the new Conservative Party is.
Because in the what we're seeing here in New Zealand with the National Party especially as well, they're getting less and less socially conservative, and they haven't actually been socially conservative. That's been a carefully crafted image that is repeated. But for instance, initial abortion legalization in the 70s was done by the National Party. So a lot of the leftward movements on social issues have been done by the National Party, and people get confused into thinking that they're more socially conservative simply because they have three or four MPs who are socially conservative. So if there's if there's able to be a proper split there, or we're able to have an actually conservative faction in Parliament, for New Zealand, that would be a step in the right direction. Much like many people, or at least libertarians, were happy to get some progress on the ACT Party last time. I think it would be what we really do need is some progress there. And in part, this is because the National Party already put their weight behind new legislation that has been proposed today. And whether or not they will back out now that the legislation is out remains to be seen. But at least Judith Collins had endorsed legislation like the sorry, I haven't got the name of the bill in front of me. The Conversion Practices Prohibition Legislation Bill, which is supposedly there to prohibit conversion therapy. This is something that the Labour Party promised. But if you look at the bill itself, it does not just prohibit conversion or so-called conversion therapy. They specifically mention that if you make any attempt to change sexual orientation or gender identity or gender expression, which are not really defined in any way, if you attempt to change them or to attempt to prevent somebody from changing what they claim is their sexual orientation or gender identity, then you will be committing a crime. This will be included to things like prayer. This will be parental instruction, parental guidance is also included in this. So if you have children who say, you have a son who's like, oh, maybe I'm a girl, I want to go on hormone blockers. And if as a parent you say no, you can go to prison for 3 years under this proposed legislation. That's the extent to which it goes. If you say, or somebody comes to you and says, hey, I struggle with this sin, it's a sexual sin, and you say, okay, I'll pray with you again, then you're committing an offense for up to 3 years in prison. That's the type of legislation that the Labour Party is proposing now. Green Party is behind it. The National Party had committed to supporting this legislation, but we shall see if they support it to this extent. And whether or not the ACT Party is going to get behind this, we will find out. Again, there's an interesting opportunity for there if they are politically savvy to take advantage of it.
As you know, the Victorian Parliament passed similar laws at the beginning of the year, which probably inspired the Labour New Zealand government's bill. The two Liberal Democrat MPs, David Limbrick and Tim Quilty, did vote against it. So there's also that standard set by our Australian libertarians that I would expect the ACT Party to oppose it.
The bill in itself becomes contradictory too, because it says you can't change an attempt to change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity is cruel. It's essentially does the great harm, because it's not possible to change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity, except that's exactly what people do all the time. It happens, or at least is incredibly common, and to a high profile people on the right, Milo Yiannopoulos being a recent one, there are entire organizations dedicated to people who have either changed their sexual orientation, who have detransitioned, and obviously as a religion, Christianity has a sexual ethic. It has very fixed standards of sexual behavior, very strict understanding of gender and roles that men and women fulfill in the hierarchy. And all of this is essentially criminalized by this legislation, at least if you were to teach it or share it specifically with somebody who was struggling with one of these issues. The bill then becomes contradictory in saying that children, so if you're under the age of 18 or somebody who is not able to make their own decisions, which is including children, they cannot consent to conversion therapy. So they, if you tell them, no, you can't, no, you shouldn't do this, then you're committing a criminal offense. But on the other hand, it has specific clauses that say, if you encourage them to do this, so if they go and say, I'm a boy, I want to become a girl, I want to be a boy, or I believe I'm attracted to XYZ, I want to, you know, do this and that, then they may help them to explore their gender identity. So if you're helping somebody explore their gender identity, then they can make that decision. If they want to go on hormone blockers at the age of 12, as a parent, you cannot stop them from taking that medication, but you may encourage them to take that medication. So this is transgender imperialism in its full implementation.
Yeah, you can still convert children to the LGBT lifestyle, just not the other way around. Does this bill cover adults as well? Is it a full conversion?
It's specifically targeted as a special offense towards those under the age of 18 or otherwise mentally impaired. But it does cover everyone. So even if you are over the age of 18, you would still not be allowed to receive these services, seek them out, or to give them to somebody over the age of 18 to, you know, and by say services, I'm saying praying with them or sharing specific religious teachings or religious doctrines. All of that is mentioned in the legislation as being a criminal offense.
And Jacinta, she's also, well, I should say the New Zealand Labour government released their draft hate speech proposal, which obviously includes what is deemed homophobic and transphobic hate speech. In Victoria, there is still pending the Racial and Religious Tolerance Amendment Act, which would expand the Racial and Religious Tolerance Act to cover a whole bunch of other attributes, including sexuality and gender identity. So homophobia or transphobia is not yet illegal in Victoria, which is why the Victoria Police and the DPP to imprison Neil Erickson again couldn't charge him with homophobia when he was inside queer-friendly church, called them a fake church who marry sodomites. So I'll go through the article here. True. He was convicted of disturbing religious worship, which is, of course, is an ancient charge. He's already served 4 weeks in prison for disturbing Islamic prayers at Federation Square in March 2019. This was a meeting of the Metropolitan Community Church, which is a LGBT church in Melbourne. He went into one of their open meetings in May 2019 to ask them about their marriage practices, and it got quite heated. So this is the AAAP article, Vic extremist jailed for LGBT church abuse. And it was written by Gus McCubbing. That sounds like some sort of like gay cosplay.
The journalists often have appropriate names. Whether or not they're real people is undeterminable.
Far-right extremist Neil Erickson has been jailed for 10 weeks after he marched into a... He actually didn't march, like, into a queer-friendly Melbourne church and hurled homophobic abuse. Erickson, 36, on Friday, was sentenced in an online hearing at Melbourne Magistrates Court after being found guilty of disturbing a religious service at the Metropolitan Community Church at Hawthorne in May 2019. He walked into the church with two women about 20 minutes after the congregation had convened and briefly took a seat before standing up to ask if they married sodomites. Erickson, who live-streamed the incident, also said, "You're not Christians, you're a bunch of..." Now, I have no problem saying this word, but AAP have leaked it out. I'm not sure if I should say it on YouTube, but I have no problem in saying that word.
don't risk having your channel taken down over a word.
I was just saying that for the record. He was immediately asked to leave but refused to do so. Magistrate Angela Bolger described Erickson's incursion as confronting, provocative, and insulting. She said while he had the right to be willfully ignorant as he chooses, he did not have the right to disturb a lawful religious gathering. "It's appalling and shameful conduct, but I suspect you might be beyond shame because you've done this before. To place people gathered together in a quiet, prayerful contemplation in such abuse is awful. There's no justification that can be offered to excuse it, and Mr. Erickson doesn't really offer any excuse or justification." Ms. Bolger said Ms. Erickson's motivation for the offence appeared to be self-aggrandizement. "I can only assume the audience Mr. Erickson tried to capture is vanishingly small, as not even his companions at the conclusion were fully supportive of him." And it goes on to Neil Erickson told the court, "I'm happy to do prison again, but I'd prefer a fine." Ms. Bolger said, "Well, I bet you would." Erickson, who described himself in court as a retired nationalist and religious activist, had in his defence referred to verses of from the Old Testament book of Leviticus. He argued that the Metropolitan Community Church could not be construed as religious gathering as its views regarding same-sex marriage contravened the Bible.
Correct.
And going on here, what is that? The court previously heard church members were shaken by Erickson's incursion, didn't know if he was armed, which is, what is it? Do you just like, assume that you don't are armed, and that his live stream video caused increased distress to some who had not yet come out to their family and friends? Erickson, who lives in Wonthaggi, was directed to surrender himself at Melbourne Magistrates Courts on Monday, which I believe that Neil will do to go for another 10 weeks in whatever prison they decide to send him, send him to.
I remember my controversial take initially that that I actually did believe he was guilty of disturbing Islamic prayers, and being in a nation that has freedom of religion, then that would cover Islam, of course, that a prison sentence is something I disagreed with. But what you can see this time is his prison sentence that he got for disturbing a fake gay church was... what 2.5 times as bad as Islamic prayers. But Islam is a real religion, and the supposedly homosexual church is not a real religion, because as he pointed out, it contravenes teachings in the Bible. It contravenes thousands of years of Christian doctrine. It is not a legitimate religion. So he would not actually, it would not have been possible for him to disturb religious worship in that context. So, bad judge, I guess, but his argument was very good, because that's exactly what I thought of when I heard of the story. I hadn't read that article before you went through it. You can see which state religions they are keen to protect.
In that
sense, the LGBT religion is the greatest of all religions. Yeah.
10 weeks for disturbing an LGBT gathering, but only 4 weeks for a Muslim prayer gathering. I'd say, again, as we went through on our previous show, LGBT people are still at the top of the intersectional hierarchy, and I guess that's also why Jacinta decided that it was worth upsetting the Islamic community by finally putting on the table this her own gay conversion therapy
ban. Yes, because the transgender conversion legislation lets would totally upset the entire Muslim communities. It would upset most of the Polynesian communities. But because the Labour Party has an outright majority, they can simply push it through and hope that they're not burning too much political capital on it. How much opposition will be able to be mustered? How much, whether it's possible to even alter this slightly or to bring it down completely, we shall see. Whether it will really hurt their poll numbers in the process, like that's the only thing that would really slow them down, is if it were shown to be tanking, they were shown to be tanking in the polls. But it's unlikely that the people who generally support Labour care enough, if they don't feel like it's hurting them directly, people are not very likely to change their to be politically persuaded, sadly. So it's going to be really interesting how that goes, how that works out. But this is happening in conjunction with the hate speech legislation as well, of course, right? The hate speech legislation is separate to this. Yet this legislation, just looking at it, is already far worse than the hate speech legislation, probably because it outright targets religion, whereas the hate speech legislation at least theoretically would protect religious beliefs to a certain extent. Whether or not who would win out in the hierarchy of hate speech wars, we don't know. But when it comes to gender and sexuality, this is blatantly targeting religion and family, because they call out parents as targets of the bill. So some of the commenters have pointed out, the Pacific Islanders will not tolerate this. The issue is that on the whole, they don't really pay attention to politics, and the media, any media coverage they get, plays this down and doesn't really report on it. So they don't really know what's going on for the most part.
But Ralph Malau, Pacific Islanders are still lower on the intersectional hierarchy than LGBT.
Pacific Islanders are at the bottom of the intersectional hierarchy. They're the ones that get trampled on. We shall see if they eventually make a bit of a move.
Now we're told throughout this pandemic to follow the science, or when it comes to climate change, the science is settled until there's new science, and apparently there's Maori science.
You're learning about the Maori science now. Matuaranga Maori is essentially knowledge or traditional teaching or information that's gathered and presented. It includes mythology origins of natural processes and information about, say, for instance, what may be toxic, plants may be toxic to eat, but if you cook them, then they become safe to eat. All of this knowledge that they accumulated in their, primitive, pre-industrialized or pre-European settings. But what happened is that I'll go through this backwards now, since you've got the professor who's stepped down first here. He put forward a statement saying, no, this type of traditional medicine, this is on par with Chinese medicine and acupuncture, really. He's saying, no, this is not science, right? the scientific, scientific theory or the scientific process is an experimental one where you find out exactly why these things happen. Whereas most of the Matuaranga is has to do with simply, okay, well, we know that this plant is safe to eat, and we know that that plant is not safe to eat. And so, whereas the experimental science would be able to tell you, well, these are the, this is the chemical compounds and so on, none of which they had. And their understanding is largely based on mythological concepts as well. So they've provided explanations or had stories passed down, some of which probably have some basis in truth, and they've provided these explanations to create a coherent stories that they could pass out and tell. But this is obviously very, very different from the scientific process. Now, when you when you point this out now, because of course to state that this particular knowledge is not science is that you have upset the entire you've upset the entire apparatus of
that's the
yeah,
it's
so
cultural
it's worse than just racist. It's worse than just racist because science was invented by Westerners. They say Westerner when they really mean Christian.
Well, white people
and Europeans. And so by saying that it's not the same, is they're accused of being white supremacist. Where and these professors don't understand what's going on because they're like, okay, we're just making a simple empirical statement to say, no, this particular system is based on pure material studies, and this other system is based on sort of an epistemology and mythology that has been produced by people, by their culture over, you know, the generations that they lived here in New Zealand. yet what they haven't realized is there has been this merging, because science, which used to be grounded in a Christian, the true myth of Christianity, science could exist within that because Christianity would give science the framework in which it could then say, okay, well, we have the basis of an ordered universe, and so therefore we can do these, we can perform a scientific method, we can do experimental science, and we can always expect the same results. We can expect to learn this knowledge because we exist within this Christian framework. But as science has left the Christian framework and invented its own mythology, it's now found that it needs to merge itself in with the Maori mythology within New Zealand. And so that's where this clash is happening. These professors are falling behind they will get purged out of the system because I guess the closest recent example that we could have from the 20th century is the Soviet media, Pravda, and the point wasn't to make you believe it to be true, right? They follow this mythology, the neo-paganism, and in some strange sense the neo-colonialism that happens to insert this mythology. They don't actually believe it to be true. They don't truly believe in these gods. They don't truly believe in these myths. But they have to simply say it as if they believe it, as if it were true, much in the same way that to exist inside the Soviet system. You had to repeat the lies that everybody knew were lies. As long as you stated the lies, then the system...
kooky agricultural... expert practices which didn't grow crops and contributed to the fact.
But all you had to do was to exist within this mythology that had been created, and so that's where the poor scientists are getting cut out because they won't go along with the mythology because, like, well, it's obviously not true, but that's not the point. Part of the point is to immerse yourself in this replacement for Christianity. That's what it comes down to. This is a replacement for Christianity, and it will merge itself in with the science, because the kind of the atheistic, purely naturalistic myth that underpins science, most of the historical science, geology and evolution and the biology is collapsed. It doesn't maintain any kind of cohesive narrative, or it doesn't maintain any deeper meaning for anybody. So they know that one's not true, and so they're inserting another one that they know is not true, but at least will provide deeper meaning for people. So now if we step further back to where this came from, I think I provided the link to Michael Riedel's tweets from earlier this month. We'll go through this first. This was the article that you see up there is the article that these professors had posted. You don't have to read through the whole thing. They praise the Maturanga Maori by saying, this is good, and European, science can be bad sometimes, science has been used by colonization and et cetera, et cetera. But that wasn't good enough, right? The material itself is not offensive at all. In fact, it's slightly woke, if you like to use the word woke. Certainly it reads like a little bit of a woke epistle, but it was still heretical by these standards. So, tweets from Michael Riedel were from a month ago. If you want to bring up one of those images, you'll see what prompted this. He asked a school teacher if he could be provided with the topics that were being taught in science class. And you can see here the subtopics they're learning here in geology are about heat transfer, convection, conduction, and radiation, the structure of the Earth, plate tectonics, etc., earthquakes, European science, and Maturanga Maori version of why they happen. Can you compare the two? So this is a science class, and the children are being asked to, on an equal level, compare the European science with the mythology of the Maori people. Same thing with the Wellington Harbour. And you can note here that Wellington has been misspelled a number of times, I believe two times here in the screenshot. But this is just par for the course in NCEA. How was the Wellington Harbour formed under European science and then under the Maori myths? Your advantage of this, by the way, is that both of them are actually wrong, because they're supposed formation will be like millions of years ago, blah, blah, blah. And the Maturanga version will be like, well, the Taniwha came along and did this. It doesn't actually matter because they're both wrong. But old school academics at the universities will be freaking out about this as they slowly get purged out when they misspeak. So, but this is what they teach in schools at the moment. NCA, you get science at school. That's it. Yeah.
Now we have gone into overtime. We'll stay for a couple more minutes for if you've got any questions or want to send through a super chat or hyper chat. I'll finish off with cancel culture update. And now the Australian left have been trying for nearly 20 years to cancel commentator Alan Jones, who used to be on Radio 2GB. He retired from that last year. Many speculate he was pushed out. Now has his weeknight Sky News Australia program. He did have a column in the Daily Telegraph, which is a Murdoch-owned paper. Sky News Australia is also Murdoch-owned, but the editor of the Daily Telegraph, Ben English, has pulled his column because they don't want to be seen as, inciting anti-lockdown protests or undermining the vaccine rollout. And so there was a lot of commentary on Twitter saying, oh, well, when you're even too extreme for the Murdoch papers. But, of course, the Murdoch score, I media organization has cancelled plenty of people or deplatformed after Blair Cottrell appeared on Sky News Australia once. They banned him and disavowed him. They also recently banned Katie Hopkins from their network. Andrew Bolton, Sherry Marks, and Sky News host said about how awful she was. And now Alan Jones, what is it? He on his program last night on Sky News, that hasn't been cancelled, issued some clarifications. He said he's never been opposed to vaccination and actually said he'd received his first dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine despite his various underlying health conditions at age 80, which include blood clots. And he's also said to people, don't go out and attend an illegal protest. Don't give the autocrats what they want. Well, so he's had to issue on his program several disclaimers as well. But he made the point because since he's made the transition from radio, which is largely a local boomer audience, to Sky News, which its Australian YouTube channel goes viral all around the world and is reaching the very young as well. And he made the point that, oh, people say I'm irrelevant. Well, look at all the YouTube and Facebook views that I get.
How do you do, fellow kids? good, but yeah, as you find out, doesn't matter how much clarification you provide, you're still going to get cancelled. I see not necessarily a question in the chat here, but a little bit of discussion around what I was saying earlier about St. Augustine talking about evolution and so on. No, he didn't. Obviously, he didn't talk about any of that. He often gets brought up by modern-day sort of theistic evolutionists who are like, well, Augustine and Origen as well wrote about the symbolic relevance of creation and the allegory that could be found within creation, but they didn't actually reject the literal creation. They often, because of what it was popular at the time, is that 6 days was too long to create, and God obviously could create instantaneously. And so they sort of theorized, well, maybe God created instantaneously, and then we have 6 days allegorized, which is the opposite of evolution, obviously. So that's a theistic evolution runs contrary to every single theologian in church history up until, you know, the last 200 or 300 years.
Well, we'll draw it to a close now if there's no other audience questions. As always, good to catch up with you. Do I now every fortnight? Trad Tasman. Next Friday, but it'll be myself and Stephen Berry of the Mr. Berry show. You on your alternate weeks, the Right Minds podcast is released.
Usually, if I get around to it, being a little bit chaotic this month, but we do hope to do another episode of the podcast soon. I perhaps will do some pre-recording with Amy. Still in discussion about doing a show with Amy at some point. So we'll see how that goes. There may be Monday shows on the Right Minds channel. There aren't likely to be very many articles at the moment, but as Tim has said, I'm back here every 2 weeks, I'm always in the Right Minds chat as well if you want to ask questions. And we will, and I see Amy's asking for a Q&A session. I think we'll try and do a bit of a bigger Q&A session next week, depending on how the news goes. Because I thought we didn't have too much to discuss this week and we'll do some extra Q&A, but we've already gone 11 minutes over time just because we got we're stuck into the small number of topics we did have.
A show with Amy, that'd have to be called Super Trad Talk.
We'll see. I haven't come up with a name yet. So, but yes,
a lifestyle show as well. Like, because obviously, you and I talk about mainly political developments. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. We wouldn't. we wouldn't really be talking about political developments or the, you know, current events. We would probably dig into more lifestyle topics. So anyway, now that I've outed her and that I've said that she's going to be doing a show, she doesn't have a choice anymore. So Origin says bread making. You have reminded me I do need to go and make some bread now. So we're going to wrap up the show because I do have a have some dough to knead. So
I'll be back on Monday for Tim's news explosion. There'll be plenty more to talk about then. So to everyone, please enjoy the weekend as best that you can in the circumstance that you find yourself in. I say stay safe and stay positive.
Mm-hmm. And New Zealanders may stay free.
Yes, and stay COVID-free.
See you all next time. Good night. Thank you for watching. Night.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Trad Tasman Talk. To keep up with the latest real news and analysis from the Tasman Nations, visit theunshackles.net and rightminds.nz.